Hi, everyone. I'm Paul Yeager. This is the MTOM Show podcast, a production of Iowa PBS and the Market to Market TV show. Andre Sizov is a return guest for us here on the podcast. He was in Moscow. He's now in Spain, but he still follows what goes on in Moscow, Ukraine, and the rest of that region when it comes to the commodity markets. He is an economist, someone who watches the markets, sometimes trades, but a grains analyst. He's going to help us understand what's going on in the Black Sea region and what that means for American producers as well as the rest of the global grains picture. We're going to talk specifically about farmers in Russia and Ukraine. We'll also talk about Turkey, India, and China. So a nice global perspective today on what's happening on a view from outside of the United States. That's this installment of the MTOM podcast. New episodes come out each and every Tuesday. Join us then. Good to see you again, Andre. You are still, looks like, at a remote location. Where are you sitting today?
I'm in Spain. We moved to Spain a couple of years ago. I'm in Costa del Sol, Malaga. Pretty hot here today.
Yeah, but what's hot for Spain, though? Hot for Spain is like, I think, don't you think 100 is cool for some parts of Spain?
Now we're getting in that complicated Fahrenheit to Celsius conversion, but it's relatively hot and it's very dry. Spain is very dry and this crop going to be a disaster for Spain. Fortunately for Europe, it's not the biggest producer. And for example, France, the number one grain grower and exporter, looks very good still. But Spain, which is to the south from France, is very dry. And that's south of Spain, Andalusia, southern part of southern Europe. Yeah, very dry and hot.
Yeah, we've been following it comes up in our discussion about the drought in France and the dry conditions there. Before you went to Spain, you were living in Russia?
I was living in Moscow all my life. But I was living in the UK for some time, in Spain when I was studying, in different places. In the US, I had a few programs, spent probably several months in the US, different places. But yeah, mainly in Russia. I was born in Russia and I was living in Russia till 2021.
Yeah. 2021, things changed there dramatically, and it was quite the region to instability was the name of the day, still is.
Yes, it was quite volatile even before the war started in 2022. But yeah, it was very volatile, and if you were and you are trading wheat, you have to follow this region closely. Corn is also important, but wheat is number one. Russia has been and still is number one wheat exporter. Ukraine, top three, top four wheat exporter. Ukraine, top four corn exporter, number one exporter of corn to China, which is very important for the US, obviously. Yeah, and that region wasn't transparent and still not transparent and wasn't volatile, unpredictable, untransparent before the war. And this is what we're doing. We're helping people to understand what's happening here so they won't make any very costly mistakes being on wrong side of trade when something big happens, whether it's drought or drone attack, which just happened last week on the Kremlin, and Chicago rallied 5% after that. And we're just helping people to be ahead of the crowd following what's happening here.
And you are a trader, economist. How do you catalog yourself, Andre?
Economist, analyst, from time to time trader, but mainly invested, just my own personal pension money, let's put it that way. We have people, so we're analysts. Our main product is our report, Sizov.report. You can go online and check it and get your free trial. We have, personally, I'm sitting in Spain. We have people in different places, in Georgia, in Russia, and Ukraine. So this is what we do. We gather information, some information from traders, farmers, trying to understand what could happen in the market and help our clients to deal with events happening in this region.
When the invasion happened into Ukraine, there was this concern that Ukrainian farmers were not going to be able to plant. Ukrainian farmers were able to plant. They were able to get a crop. They were able to get it to their bins or storage. But getting it after that has been a challenge. What's the current status of, in general terms, of a Ukrainian farmer trying to get a crop somewhere that's not Ukraine?
You're correct. It was obviously very challenging times. You know, in some cases, farmers in Ukraine were harvesting their crops last year, just a few miles, there was a front and shooting nearby. But Ukrainian farmers, now we can say that Ukrainian farmers were way more resilient than the market was expecting. The production did drop, but it was, I think it was way higher than many were predicting at the start of the war, which started in February. So indeed, both wheat and crop production declined. For example, wheat fell from 30 million tons, or I'll use tons, to 20 million tons. But still, that's a good crop, relatively. And those 30 million tons, we should add, that was a record high crop. So it was substantially below 2021, but it was still an okay crop, taking account that it was war times. And, you know, if you, for example, one takeaway, if you're looking at the Ukrainian map, and reading news from the Black Sea, you should be in mind that south of Ukraine near the Black Sea, Azov Sea, that's the main wheat belt where the country produces its wheat. Currently, southern eastern part of Ukraine is controlled by Russia, a big share of it. And central and northern regions, those are regions where they mainly grow corn. So now, part of the country is controlled by Russia, around 20%, and that's mainly bad for Ukrainian wheat crop. For example, last year when Russian troops pulled out from central Ukraine, from near Kyiv, you might remember those many shots, satellite shots, it was very beneficial for Ukrainian late crops like sunflower and corn, so Ukrainian farmers could harvest those crops. If we talk about the stocks and that old crop, by now, actually, it has been mainly shipped and the export program is done by around 90% or even more. Around 5-7 million tons of crops left from the previous season because they were exporting quite actively via the Green Corridor, Green Deal. Probably we'll talk about that later. And then they started to actively ship via the EU land to Romania, to Hungary, to Poland, to Bulgaria. But it was a big problem. You know, the Ukraine has a different gauge, rail gauge, compared to the EU, so you can just send a big train with all those crops directly to Romania, to Constanza. You have to change the wheels or to unload from one rail car to another, and that all takes time. Unfortunately for Ukraine, they also had a very important new, relatively new route, or mostly forgotten route, but that time. It's the Danube, that river flowing through Eastern Europe. There were very small terminals, and Danube is a river, so you just only barges 1,000 tons, something like that. But it became very important, especially when Odessa terminals, main terminals on the Black Sea, were blocked because of the war. So now they can ship around 20 million tons via the Danube, and that's a lot. So basically, they shipped almost all their crops from the previous season. And taking account that we expect a substantial decline, further decline in production in the new year, they have enough capacity, or almost enough capacity, to ship all their wheat, corn, barley, and sunflower and sun oil in the new season, even without the Green Corridor everyone is talking about. So the importance of the Green Corridor is becoming it's becoming less important compared to what it was a year ago, when there were bigger crop and huge stocks from the previous year.
Okay, so is that why there'll be less wheat planted? Because there's still a lot of stocks? Is that why you said the crop will be smaller?
The crop will be smaller because, you know, there's still a war.
Right.
The area is down But it has been planted. It's roughly minus 20% year on year. Winter wheat, it has been planted already last fall. That's one reason. Another reason, it's harder to get inputs and harder to get fuel. There is still a war going on. And I think one of the biggest problems probably for late crops like corn would be fertilizer, because it's, you know, it's physically a lot. You need a lot of fertilizer. Corn requires a lot of fertilizer. So it's not seeds. It's not chemicals, crop protection, which just physically doesn't require a lot of space. But fertilizer, that's a lot of volume. And on top of that, Russia was the biggest supplier of fertilizer to Ukraine prior to the war. So now Ukraine has to get the fertilizer somehow another way. And that's another reason why we think we will see a substantial decline in production, particularly in corn. We expect to see around 22, 23 million tons crop compared to 28 million tons previous year and 42 million tons 2 years ago. So it's 50% compared to what the country produced in 2021.
So the Ukrainian producer is like the American producer of, they may have bought chemicals and inputs and seed and had it before Russia invaded. That's where they were able to put it in. But now it's much harder to restock all those inputs and expensive. And yes, those are two of the factors. So yes, what does the Ukrainian farmer produce then this year?
That's a good point. So by February 2022, when it was started, a lot of bought similar to, so farmers are not buying everything just a week ahead of the field walk. A lot was bought already, wheat, winter wheat was planted. And fortunately, as I mentioned, fortunately for Ukrainian farmers and for Ukrainian corn crop, Russia pulled out of central and northern Ukraine, which is major corn growing region, last year. And that allowed them to first plant corn and then harvest that corn later on. So now things are more complicated in terms of inputs. Russia control less of Ukrainian territory, which is good for Ukrainian corn crop, for example. But at the same time, bigger need for inputs. Inputs are becoming more expensive. Fertilizer is hard to get, as we talked about already. It's not Russia as a supplier of fertilizer anymore. And yes, I think in many cases, and that's one of our assumptions, that many farmers, Ukrainian farmers, would prefer to plant less corn and switch to other crops, for example, like sunflower, first of all, which is just cheaper. You can still get an okay crop with way less inputs per hectare, per acre. And so farmers will prefer to, I think, to plant more oilseed generally than corn this year.
Well, and when you say less inputs, it makes me think of it, American farmers did kind of the same thing, not no inputs or no fertilizer, just less. And they found out, well, we did okay because they were trying to, you know, save on that. All right. You also said one other thing about the ports, less risk. Just last week, I think it was, Andre, the American market responded heavily to problems at the port. Will that continue to be a dominator of trade in Chicago of what goes on there in those Black Sea ports that you were referring to?
I think there are two questions. One is, will Chicago and Matif, that's European Exchange, will have and will follow Green Corridor Agreement? They will. And we'll have to follow that agreement. So Russia says that it could be terminated on May 18. And if it really is terminated, I think there is a huge headline risk. We know, see here, Bloomberg, Reuters, all the big guys writing about that humanity is doomed. And we'll see, we're likely to see a big rally in Chicago, first of all, probably in Matif as well. At the same time, and I think that's important to know if you kind of try to look at the market more fundamentally, as I mentioned, for Ukraine, the importance of that corridor is not as big as you might think reading the headlines. Because One Eagle, huge stocks, a lot of bigger crop, lots of stocks from the previous season trapped inside the country, and you have to ship them somehow. But by now, as I said, export program is done, stocks are lower, new crop is expected to be lower. So Ukraine actually can ship all its wheat, corn, barley, and other crops, almost all, without the grain corridor. So it's not really that important. But as I said, that's a big headline risk. So one point. And another point, I think you mentioned that last week Chicago rose sharply because of the grain corridor talks. I think it wasn't they still have to follow it, but it wasn't the number one driver. I think the number one driver last week was the drone attack on the Kremlin, Moscow Kremlin. And after that, on that data, and I mean, I'm just watching the chart, and just when the news appeared, half an hour, the market started to rally. I think that was the biggest story. And the market was afraid that we could see some further escalation after those attacks. But today, now we're talking on May 9, there was a victory parade in Moscow, and that's a very important event for Kremlin, for Moscow, for Russia. And I think many were afraid, or not afraid, were betting that we could see some escalation on May 8, May 9, or perhaps May 10. But it hasn't happened, at least as we are recording this. And we see today Chicago is going down, European wheat prices are going down. So I think it was the biggest driver, not the grain agreement deal. Because grain agreement, I mean, you know, it has been around for months. And, you know, Russia keeps threatening that we're going out of this agreement, it won't be terminated, our demands are not met. And the market just, and Chicago during that time fell, I don't know, 20%, 15%, because, you know, the market doesn't really believe Kremlin's narrative. Kremlin should do something about it just to make it to believe, to look serious, because by now, I mean, prices, they're threatening, prices are falling. Another important topic, and probably it could be even more important than talks, in Istanbul that will be held tomorrow and the day after tomorrow, May 10, May 11. Another important topic to follow and which we're following closely is the election in Turkey, because President Erdogan, I think he's a big personal supporter of the Green Agreement. He's kind of godfather of the Green Agreement, and that agreement is being called, for example, in Turkish media, that it's Erdogan's deal. So it's not a Green Deal, it's not a Black Sea Deal, it's not the UN Grand Deal, it's Erdogan's deal. And it's very important for him personally, I think. And actually, I think that's the key reason why the Kremlin is supporting this deal, because it's my guess, my speculation, that's a personal agreement between Putin and Erdogan. And so if Erdogan is not winning the election is going to start on May 8, is going to happen on May 14. If he's not going to win, I think risks for this grain deal will be higher, which, if we get back to our conversation, but there's some substantial headline risk. But in reality, I think it's not really such a big deal for the global grain market, because Ukraine can do even without that green corridor.
You don't think that we would trade that headline without understanding the full impact of that Turkey election? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that there is a huge headline risk. I mean, if Russia says
right.
I think has
become a big problem with this wheat market and understanding the black. It is be more about the headlines. As I listen to you explain the headlines to me, but we have this problem in Chicago. We love to trade headlines. Oh, exactly. It's dry in Kansas. It's dry in Oklahoma.
Yes. Exactly.
Up, down, up, down.
Yes, exactly. And that happened, for example, after the start of the invasion in February 2022, when the market rallied. We saw five, six sessions, limit up sessions in a row. The market rallied around 50%, and it looked like it was pricing in that all exports from the Black Sea, not only Ukraine, but Russia, would stop or have stopped already. But Russia had just a temporary stop, and actually Ukraine also resumed its export quite, I think, in several weeks after the start of the invasion. So, but the market was pricing, so no more grain coming out of the Black Sea, which was very which was not correct. So it was rallying till May, roughly April, May, and then started to reverse. But by now, I think the situation is opposite. At that time, the market was overestimating Black Sea risks. Now it's clearly, in my view, underestimating Black Sea risks because there is still a war going on. Lots of grain inside Russia, some grain inside Ukraine, and that rally, short-term rally we saw last week, it was just a reminder that the market really should pay more attention to the Black Sea. You know, it's still very volatile and very important region for the global grain market and especially global wheat S&D.
I asked about the Ukrainian farmer. What's the Russian farmer's plight right now? What are they facing?
Oh, Russian farmers, fortunately for them, they operate in a way more peaceful environment. But, you know, there are also some missiles and drones flying into southern and western Russia. But at the same time, they have another problem. In 2021, prior to the war, Russia introduced a very strict export tax on all main crops, all cash crops, including wheat. And so the result of that is that Russian farmers are facing very low prices. In fact, prices inside Russia we're going to lose it because it's in dollars per ton. But it's roughly 40-50% lower than in Ukraine, which faces a full-scale war, and around 60-70% lower than in the EU because of those taxes which were introduced by the government. So those taxes are currently taking around one-third of farmers' revenue out of their pocket. So in many cases, you know, Russia is a big country. So southern Russia, central Russia, margins are still positive there for farmers. But Volga Valley, more eastern parts of the country, margins, I think wheat margins and margins for many crops are negative. And that's the biggest problem Russian farmers are facing. At the same time, inputs are higher as well, prices for inputs. So fertilizer not as high, Russia big exporter. But what has just, I think, almost doubled in some cases, it's prices for machinery. So some companies pulled out of Russia, like Deere, Eckers. They were not the major marketplace, but still important. And now farmers are getting spare parts. Everything got from prices rose in 2 years, by 50-100% in 3 years, and that's now that's so P&L, that's their P&L is the biggest problem for many Russian farms.
So the Russian farmer, if I get this right, is being penalized because of their government. They yes. are able to grow their crop with less bombs and missiles, but yes, they're still happening. But there's no market, nobody is buying because it's a Russian product. And even though the Russian farmer isn't at the Kremlin, it's the Kremlin that's making the Russian farmer be penalized on a global picture.
So conclusion is right. So yes, is that being penalized because of those export taxes? All major crops are taxed. Exports are taxed. You said that no one is buying Russian product. No, that's not correct. Russia, in fact, is shipping its wheat at record high pace this year, and it's very likely to set a new record this season, around 44-45 million tons. That's a new record high because of very high stocks. Russia produced a record high crop last year, more than 100 million tons. Stocks are high, which put additional pressure on domestic prices. Domestic prices are low, but no, exports are flowing more or less freely, but there are infrastructure bottlenecks. Russia can't export more because of infrastructure. And there are also some issues because of the sanctions. Food is not directly sanctioned, but you know, it takes time, more time to get payments. Everything takes more time. But again, it's not the biggest problem. Biggest problem Sure. is the tax, which was introduced in 2021. So you might heard about Argentina. They've been messing with the farmers for decades. And at the end of the day, they have inflation and food inflation more than 100% year on year now, because they were saying that you know, we need to protect the domestic consumer. And that motive that we need to protect the domestic consumers, it was a similar motive in case of Russia. In 2021, they introduced the export tax, and that's the biggest problem for farmers. So just, okay, so one third of their revenue is being taken out of their pocket because of the tax. So currently, farmers somewhere in Volga Valley might get only $110 per ton, $120 per ton. Oh, hard to convert that, but yeah, that's around $4 per bushel.
Yeah, I'm asking you to do math in real time. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no. It's $4 per bushel. You can open Chicago and see prices like steel, $6.5, $7 per bushel. So here's the prices. Here's the internal prices because of the tax and because of high stocks that Russia currently sitting on.
Okay, two countries to me. I want your take on what their influence is having on all of this discussion we're having. China and India, what is their influence on any of the talks between the Kremlin and Ukraine? And Turkey, you mentioned Turkey's influence here, but give me a little take about what China and India's influence is in this discussion.
So, yes, you know, the Kremlin's being isolationist. Kremlin is, sorry, I don't know. Yeah, made a mistake and didn't turn off my phone. Now just driving me crazy. I'm sorry. Oops. China and Turkey and India. Yeah, so the Kremlin isolation is becoming bigger because of the war. Number of allies or partners, not long-term allies, how to call them allies, is shrinking. So, yes, the Kremlin has to rely more on a small number of countries, and probably you mentioned all the key ones. China, probably the most important one. Turkey is probably number two, and India is number three. I won't go into energy and oil trading, which is obviously a way more important part for Russian budget and Russia as a whole. But if we talk about grains and more political stuff, there are several thoughts related to your question. One, Kremlin has to listen to those guys, and it depends on those guys. So, for example, I think this is good because, for example, China could calm down Kremlin if it wants to do something very strange or dangerous for the whole world, because China don't think it will tolerate it. For example, Putin had to remain friends more or less with Erdogan. And again, this is on one hand, Turkey probably is helping Russia to facilitate payments to the rest of the world and get payments from the rest of the world. It also helps Russia to sell its gas, for example. So Russia depends on Turkey. At the same time, Erdogan says, okay, I want a green deal. I want a green deal for my political reasons, because I want to say that, say the world, I want to get reelected and I want to be a father of the green deal. And Kremlin says, okay, you got your green deal. But at the end of the day, again, it helps the whole world. I mean, it's not black and white, it's gray. So Turkey is important because just it helps Russia to survive economically, and the West doesn't like that. But at the same time, Turkey helps the rest of the world to get the grain out of the Black Sea. So here's how it works. If we talk about the grain deal again, Turkey, we talk about that. China, probably they are interested in the grain deal extension, and so there was some speculation about that. But there is so-called peace plan, Chinese peace plan. 12 points, it's a bit vague, but at the same time, there's just a few clear points in that peace plan, and one of them was extension of the Green Deal. So China said, yes, won the Green Deal. And again, as I said, because Putin has to rely on Xi Jinping more and more, he has to listen to him quite closely. So basically, and just again, so I think people, I don't know when people will be watching this, but I think as we talked, they will have to follow Green Deal. And that's one of the reasons why we think there is still a high probability that Green Deal will be extended. Maybe not on May 18, or maybe not this week, but at the same time, when Turkey wants that, when China wants that, and probably India also wants that, but we don't know that, but we can assume that. I think there are not so many partners left, and some of them say we want that extension. We think this is good. I mean, the Kremlin has to follow, even if it doesn't want to extend the deal. He has to listen.
All right, let's wrap up with this. What does the American farmer, who actively watches both the corn and wheat markets of what we've been talking about, what do they need to be watching? You mentioned the grain deal. Kind of need to see where that thing lands. But what are a couple of other things we need to watch here in the next month to 2 months?
So obviously, if we talk about what's happening now in the grain market, so Southern American wheat, it has been priced in, I think, more or less. We know we have just a crop in Argentina, a very good crop in Brazil. U.S. dryness, especially, that's a big story for wheat. And we just saw some improvement of crop conditions, but they're just marginally above record low. If we look at the EU currently looks quite good. New crop, and that's mainly wheat. France looks good. Germany looks okay. Spain, we talk about that, but it's not the biggest supplier. And Black Sea is going to be still a very important piece of a puzzle. As I mentioned earlier, lower supplies from Ukraine because of lower crop, but Russia will still very likely to remain number one wheat exporter in the next season as well. We expect to see a substantial decline in production in Russia because of, we won't get such ideal weather probably, but because of huge carry out stocks from the current season, we talked about that briefly, Russia still have a supply of wheat almost similar to the current season. So still a lot of wheat going out of Russia. And we talked about the grain deal, but apart from grain deal, I think there is still a possibility Russia will try to at least make more verbal interventions about its own experts, not Ukrainian experts, how it can mess with them, but how it can mess with its own experts. Because, you know, when the issue is, I think the Kremlin is running out of playing cards in this game where it looks like it's not winning. And one of the cards, I think, it would be its own experts. Despite huge stocks, despite all the problems for farmers, despite of falling prices inside, I think there is a relatively high chance that the Kremlin could try to mess with its own experts, or at least threaten to mess with its own Russian experts, not Ukrainian, Russian. So
mess with their own.
Yes.
Oh, all right. Andre, I appreciate the insight. Always good to hear that other global perspective from a few time zones away that we need to be watching. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for having me.
Thank you to Andre Cizov for his insight today on what's going on in that region. Always a fun discussion with him and thought-provoking as well. If you like what we're doing here, tell a friend, share an episode. We'd really like it if you do that. Thank you so much for watching, listening, or reading. We'll see you next Tuesday with another new episode.